Welcome to Technovation, a weekly conversation with people who are shaping the technology landscape. I'm Peter High, president of Meta Strategy, advisor to technology executives, Forbes columnist, book author, and your host. Each episode of Technovation features insights from top executives and thought leaders at the intersection of business, technology, and innovation. If you like what you hear, we'd be grateful if you give us a rating on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. And please subscribe so you don't miss a thing. Thank you. My guest this week is Naveen Shatha. Naveen is the managing director of the venture capital firm Mayfield Fund, one of the oldest early-stage venture capital firms. Founded in 1969, the company has invested in over 500 companies through its history, 117 of which have had initial public offerings, and over 200 of which have been acquired. The company is currently investing from its 15th early-stage fund, and additionally, it has a dedicated fund for investing in India and a partner fund that invests in China. In this interview, Naveen discusses what Mayfield looks for when deciding which entrepreneurs to invest in and which don't fit the Mayfield model. The company looks closely into what the entrepreneur is doing, which entails determining what's driving them and what their values are, what their vision is and what their mission is, and if they're interested in creating a product company and flipping it, or if they're interested in building an industry-defining company and changing the way people work, live, and play. To do that, Mayfield Fund must spend a great deal of time with the entrepreneur outside of the pitch meetings to truly understand what's driving and motivating them. Further, Naveen cites that it's critical to find out who they are, which involves determining if they have high EQ and IQ, how hungry they are, and what their ethics are. We also discuss Mayfield's work in China and India, three attributes of millennials and how to reach them, what makes for great partnerships between venture capitalists and early stage companies, and a variety of other topics.
Naveen Shatha, welcome to Technovation. It's great to speak with you today.
Absolutely. It's a real pleasure being here.
Great. Well, Naveen, you lead a venture capital firm called Mayfield Fund and an organization that recently celebrated its 50th anniversary. So congratulations on that. Very exciting milestone to reach. And although I'm sure you were someone throughout your life that has been precocious, I should stress that you were not the founder of the firm. You were not around with the firm 50 years ago, but have joined a little bit more recently, and as I say, have grown to be the leader of the organization. But for those who may be less familiar with Mayfield Fund, I wonder if you could talk a bit about it and describe what you believe are some of its differentiating qualities in the field of venture capital.
Absolutely. So let me first of all start by thanking you for congratulating us on our 50th year anniversary. We are a built-to-last firm, which has lasted many generations. I represent the fourth generation of Mayfield. I joined the firm in 2006 and started leading the firm starting 2008. So it's been more than a decade, and it's been a real pleasure and honor to be taking this firm forward. As far as for people who are not as familiar with Mayfield, is one of the oldest early stage venture capital firms in the business. We were founded in 1969. In our history, we have invested in over 500 companies. We've been extremely lucky that 117 of them have had IPOs and over 200 have been acquired. Today, we are investing from our 15th early stage fund, which is a $4 or $5 million fund. And we also have an opportunities fund, which we are investing in select mid-stage companies, both within our portfolio and outside our portfolio. And then we have a global footprint. We have a dedicated fund for investing in India. And we have a partner fund, which invests in China. As far as our focus is concerned, our early stage fund is focused on Series A investing. So we get involved at the very early stages of the formation of a company. And the areas we'll talk about, I'm sure, as we go later in this talk, there are three primary sectors or segments of the market we are investing in. The first one is enterprise or business-to-business markets, where we invest up and down the stack. The second is consumer-facing opportunities. And the third is engineering biology, where engineering meets biology and is reinventing several trillion-dollar industries. What differentiates us compared to some of the other players in the market is Mayfield is a firm which is known for being a people-first firm. We believe people make products, products don't make people. So our investments are primarily based on betting on the jockey and not the racetrack. So we are very focused on picking people first and market second. And then I would say most of our team have been entrepreneurs or worked in startups. And we have great domain expertise in the areas we are investing in. And over our 50-year history, as you well know, we have built a massive network of industry partners, over 2,000 of them, who can help our companies in the early stages of their product market fit and go-to-market strategies. And we have built a dedicated team of portfolio services people who are helping our companies with recruiting, market development, branding, and go-to-market strategies, if you will. Yep. So that's in a nutshell, a 2 to 3 minute summary on Mayfield.
That's wonderful. Thank you for that overview, Naveen. As you mentioned in that answer, you focus on early bets on entrepreneurs and their companies. And on the one hand, that's a fortuitous time to invest. You're ahead of a lot of the other rounds of investments. Presumably, you can that get that much more of the growth associated with those firms if they are successful. On the other hand, you're often placing bets earlier than some of your peers in the venture community who perhaps wait until success has been proven to at least a greater extent, product success, defining the market, going after that, seeing the growth that they've achieved and so on. And so as a result, naturally, it's also a bit riskier the earlier one gets involved in those investments. And you mentioned also that you focus on people, not products. I like that, the betting on the jockey, not the racetrack. But I'm wondering, especially as you may be investing when the concept is, has fairly recently been, on a napkin as opposed to out in the marketplace, how you screen those entrepreneurs to determine who you believe are worth the dollars that you're investing?
Absolutely. So I think first and foremost, the bet is on the entrepreneur. And then you look at why they are doing this stuff. What's driving them? What are their values? What's their vision? What's their mission? And are they interested in creating a product company and flipping it? Or they're interested in changing the world and changing the way people work, live, and play and build a industry-defining company? And for that, you have to spend a lot of time with the entrepreneur outside of the pitch meetings. You have to make sure you really understand what's driving them, what's motivating them, who they are. Do they have EQ? Do they have IQ? How hungry they are? What are their ethics? So you have to spend a lot of time when you're investing at the earlier stages of company formation in really understanding them. Once you understand that, you have to look how willing are they to collaborate with us, collaborate with people they'll hire. Are they open to bringing in advisors? Are they open to bringing in other board members beyond us? And some of the things we discuss with them is, hey, is your product really a must-have or is it a nice-to? What I mean by that is it a painkiller or is it a vitamin? Are you going after too narrow a segment or is this a mass market phenomenon? What's your business model? How do you go to market? And engage in these kinds of conversations. They may not have the answers, but you start forming an opinion on how it would be to work together to figure those answers out. So the important thing I would say is really getting to know the entrepreneur and see if you can be great team members along the way as an investor investee in figuring out the evolution of the company. And if you feel during that time period that, hey, they're just different, then, and they're not willing to collaborate and not willing to be open, then it's a problem. then it doesn't fit the Mayfield model.
That makes sense, and important to stick to your knitting and what you know best, needless to say. You mentioned also, as you were defining the primary sectors or segments you focus on, topics that span both B2B as well as B2C. And I'm curious, how do you, as a partner group, as the investors that who are your team, do you divide into the three different segments you mentioned, enterprise, consumer-facing opportunities or technologies, and engineering and biology? Or do each of you or some of you cut across all three of them?
Absolutely. So what I would say is, first and foremost, right, after our DNA is built on picking people, we agree as a group within those sectors what themes are we going to be investing in, and what's our investment thesis, and what's our domain expertise. So as a broad team, which is an 8-people investment team, we get on the same page on what themes should we be looking at. And I call that a prepared mind. And 80% of what we end up investing in broadly follows those themes. But 20% of the time, or 30% of the time, you need to have a beginner's mind, that you need to just be open and look at emerging technologies and emerging markets, if you will. So it starts with, as a group, what are the themes we believe in? Then what we do is, each of those sectors that I mentioned has 2, 3, 4 people collaborating together. Some of us are generalists who participate in each of those themes and sectors, but some, 2, 3 of them, just pick one and go deep into it. But together as a team, we have a shared mental model of what does it take to build a company in that particular theme or in sectors. So in the past decade, Mayfield has benefited in investing in 6 primary themes. We have believed that it's a cloud-enabled world, which is both at the infra and at the application layer, which is SaaS. It's a mobile-first world. It's socially networked. It's software-defined. It's big data powered. And we have looked for opportunities which leverage these trends. But looking forward over the next decade, the things we are looking at are Renaissance Silicon. We believe with the end of Moore's Law, or with Moore's Law plateauing, there's going to be need for new application-specific processors, new architectures where we can keep up the performance and the price points of things. We are big believers that biology will be the new technology which will reinvent several trillion-dollar industries above and beyond healthcare. So these would be things in food. These would be things in materials. These would be things in IT, in computing, in diagnostics, in fuels, so on and so forth. We are big believers in human-centered AI, where we believe AI should not displace humans. It should augment them. We continue to look for companies which can make hacker-proof security or user-friendly security and privacy solutions. Big believers in the rise of the edge and distributed and decentralized computing. With the prevalence of distributed workforces and deskless workers, we are looking at what does the future of a workplace look like. And we continue to look at technologies which will be emerging, like AR/VR, quantum computing, blockchain computing, and just keep an open mind on some of these things. So those are, I would say, some of the things we are currently spending our cycles in. But then we keep an open mind on 20 to 30% of the time. And then on the consumer-facing opportunities, we are looking at the rise of millennials. What things do they care about? We are looking at new brands which need to get created for direct-to-consumer product and service opportunities. We are looking at what are the direct-to-consumer healthcare opportunities. So I think those are some of the themes and trends where we are spending time today.
I'd love to dial into a couple things you mentioned there. First of all, you mentioned on the consumer side, you're thinking about the rise of the millennials and what do they care about? And as you learn more about that, finding the ideas that make a connection back to it. Can you talk a bit about what you and your colleagues have derived as those things that they quote unquote care about, and maybe tie that back to an investment or two, if you care to, that you have found align particularly nicely to that evolution?
Yeah, so I think first and foremost, right, the millennials, the way they discover things is not through search, right? Like Instagram is a platform for them. It's not Facebook. So if you need to get to them, you need to have a different paradigm, which is discovery-based rather than search-based. That's first. The second thing is they're very interested in companies and technologies which do good beyond just serving their needs. So they're very conscious of the impact a company will have beyond providing a product, whether it's for planetary health or for the goodness of mankind. The third thing I would say is they're big believers in renting things versus owning them. And we call this the experience economy, if you will. So those are some of the things we are seeing with them, the way they consume stuff, the way they want to look for broader impact and where they discover things. So let's look at some examples of companies and consumers which have done well for us. First and foremost, it's Lyft, which is community-driven, which has strong values, and millennials really resonate with Lyft because of that. And the company has been extremely successful because of that. Let's look at, secondly, a company called Poshmark, which is the leader in mobile fashion, operating a social marketplace. Everything in fashion there is discovered through pictures and following other people. So it's Instagram meeting e-commerce. A third example of a company which is doing extremely well is Grove Collaborative, which is building the next generation of Procter & Gamble, where you go in and are providing household goods which need to be replenished every 4 to 6 weeks, which are greener, which are good for the environment, and it's making a huge impact. And they do a bang-up job of curation and the community educating others why to use these products over others. So those are some examples which are top of my mind that I wanted to share.
All good ones. I appreciate that. Let's switch back to some of the areas you described in terms of your B2B investments. You mentioned that with Moore's Law plateauing, there are certain areas that you've been diving more deeply into for opportunity. You mentioned augmented reality, virtual reality, blockchain, quantum computing. You also referenced artificial intelligence. I wanted to ask you, first of all, since it is businesses, obviously business to business, these are enterprises seeking enterprises or businesses seeking businesses as their customers. And what do you find as you think about the companies who are purchasing the services or the products of your portfolio companies, especially in the relatively early stage of their evolution, since again, you are investing typically in the early stage of their evolution? What are the best kinds of partnerships that you have seen? What differentiates a firm that partners very well with venture-backed, fairly early stage companies versus those that do not?
Yeah, so I think let's look at a few examples without naming companies, right?
Okay.
So what I would say is, I would say there are tech-forward companies which are looking for cutting-edge technologies to change the way they operate. And they're tech-forward in the sense they're saying, what technologies should I adopt which will change the way I operate and will increase my top line and my bottom line and give me a competitive moat against the people I compete with on a daily basis. So the startups we have, which end up doing extremely well, are able to match themselves to these tech-forward, lean-forward companies. And when that match happens, our startups are able to engage with these companies in really understanding what are their pain points? What are the biggest problems they're facing? How should they package their products? How should they position their products? How should they price them? And these tech forward companies are willing to provide them that information because they know they can't build these solutions in-house. So when that marriage happens, right, like it's a marriage made in heaven. So we look for, through our network, as you know, Mayfield has an innovators network of over 2,000 companies. We are trying to always match established companies who are looking for startups who can solve real problems for them, and they can be early adopters if these companies deliver on what they need. So it's a lot of patience, it's a lot of matchmaking, but even if you can get 5-10 industry customers talking to an early stage startup, it can do wonders. And when that product comes to market, it just hits escape velocity. So rather than giving specific examples,
yeah,
I would say we are looking for more and more tech forward companies who believe technology is the way their business is going to move forward. And these are not IT companies. I'm talking about regular companies which realize that, hey, they can get Amazon, they can get Googled, they can get Facebooked. How do they stay forward of other established Silicon Valley companies who are essentially eating into their markets, and they need B2B technologies to help them compete with those big giants?
Very, very interesting indeed. I wanted to ask you a bit about how you remain current. You have, of course, the advantage of a bright and informed team that no doubt have a lot of learning agility associated with how they operate. You also have a great advantage of being pitched a great number of ideas by very smart people who are looking to change industries. And no doubt, even for those that you don't invest in, there's a certain amount of education and enlightenment that comes from that. I wonder, I mean, of course, please validate or dispel that those two categories. I assume I have those right. But I'd also love to understand how else you remain current as to the evolution of opportunities as you contemplate how to translate that back to opportunity for Mayfield.
So I would add three things, which as a team, we try to do. One, we talk to, in the B2B space, a lot of potential customers, really understanding what are their key pain points and where is their gap in existing incumbents providing solutions. So you're talking to real customers for your potential companies you're going to fund in the future. And we have 2,000 of those in our network. So we are doing innovation briefings. They're coming to our offices. We are doing webcasts. We are going on a roadshow with them. So that's first. The second thing is we read a lot of what kind of tech innovation is happening in universities. What are the kinds of patents which are coming? What are the kinds of research papers? What are the open source projects that are being developed in industry-leading tech companies, which the rest of the world is going to need? And then thirdly, right, like we are bringing in speakers from outside who can enlighten us weekly, biweekly, monthly basis on a continuous learning path where curiosity and hunger is driving our need for understanding new areas. So those would be three things on top of the two you mentioned that is keeping us current.
Excellent. I want to go back to some of the opportunities that you described in terms of enterprise investments that you were making. Each of the topics that you've mentioned, some more than others, I think of virtual reality and artificial intelligence, quantum computing, each of them have value propositions that are near or medium term. But also each of them have long-term, and in some cases you take AI, for example, if you translate that through to artificial general intelligence, we may be decades away from that. And I'm curious, as you think about opportunity, is there a rule of thumb that you use as to how near-term the opportunity needs to be? Do you have, do you place bets that maybe, you know, a decade out, because the thinking that is being done by the entrepreneur requires a broader evolution of the marketplace? Or do you require that there is something that is potentially sellable in the very near term?
So I would say we take a balanced approach. If everything is in the near term, the big companies would be doing it.
Right.
And it's really not an early stage venture opportunity. So we try to take a balanced approach. Our belief is building an industry leading company is a marathon. It's not a sprint. So we fund a company. They'll have a product out because it's a paper and pencil idea, depending upon what they're building in 12 months, 18 months, 24 months, sometimes 36 months. So we need to make sure, based on judgment, when they come out, will there be demand from 5 customers in B2B, 10 customers, 20, 30? Because they can't serve more than that anyways, right? Then 5 years from when they started, will the market be 1,000 customers? 10 years from when they started, will the market be 100,000 customers? So I think it's based on that belief, because a startup can't handle 10,000 enterprise customers in year 3 or 4 or 5. It's going to take time. So that's why it's an evolution of a company on what they can digest, because startups need to focus too. They don't die of starvation, they die of indigestion. So this is a balance, right? If a company launches a product and has no customer demand and need, then the entrepreneur and VC haven't done their homework, right? So we want to bet on evolving markets, which are emerging and will grow at the pace a startup can grow. And when you hit that perfect storm, greatness happens.
Very interesting. And I want to also return to a point that you offered in the introduction of Mayfield. You noted that you have multiple dedicated funds in India. You also have a partner fund in China. And I wonder if you can take, these are big questions, of course, so you'll take it to the level that is appropriate in the time we have. But I wonder if you could just do provide some of your own thoughts as to the opportunities as you see them in those two marketplaces, two very dynamic, fast-growing, tech-centric countries, although obviously with very, very different profiles.
So let's start with China, right? It's the biggest broadband and wireless cellular market in the world. And has been over the last decade, the fastest growing economy. And now it's slowing down a little. So technology has already penetrated the masses there. And China, as we know, is a walled garden where domestic companies end up doing much better. So most of the companies which have done well there are primarily internet and mobile companies, which had a captive audience of billions of people whom they can use their product. And the outcomes which have been outlandish have been consumer focused. The B2B opportunities, the market is still early in China and companies are being created, but there's no Baidu, there's no Alibaba, there's no 10 billion, 20, 30, 40 billion dollar company that has been created. India is lagging China because the market for broadband hasn't been as big. It's going to become big. And the market for 4G isn't as big as China. So I would say India is 5-7 years behind China on where the tech opportunity is. So what we are seeing now in India is with mobile internet, and we are seeing tech-enabled businesses. So a lot of the businesses like food delivery, e-commerce, again, consumer-facing opportunities are skyrocketing and getting massive growth. But then as these companies become big, they're going to need technology to become more efficient, to become more streamlined, to become more automated. Then the B2B opportunities will emerge. So both in China and India, basically the markets have been consumer-first, leading to B2B and enterprise. And China has been ahead of India in tech penetration with consumers. And India is catching up. And that's where the next growth opportunity is for an early stage VC.
Excellent. Well, Naveen Chadha, thank you so much for joining me on Technovation today, describing many of the areas that you and your colleagues are excited about and investing in, sharing a bit more about the background of the great firm that you lead. It's been a great conversation.
Really appreciate your time, and thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to be here today.
Thanks for tuning in. Please join me next week, when my guest will be Jeannie Ross, the principal research scientist at MIT's Center for Information Systems Research.